Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with, again, 2 weeks in a row, Christopher John O'Shea. Christopher, how you doing tonight?
That's it, sir. Yeah, we're, who's luckier, me or you?
I don't know. Probably both of us. Anyway,
it's good to be with you. We're here on what kind of show, Drew?
We're on an open show, of course. That's what we like to do. We like to answer your questions. And if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, now's the time to call in, not later. Because, you know, like last week, we were, you know, talking to one, maybe two for the first half hour. And then the second hour, you know, next thing you know, we got three or four calls and we're going to have to rush through them. So those that call in early, they get the most attention to their question. So if you have one, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in. And I am here from Amelia Island, Florida, talking to Christopher.
I'm here Reisterstown, Maryland.
Sunny and beautiful here. No, you're in Owings Mill. I mean, you're in Pikesville, Maryland.
Reisterstown Road, sure.
Reisterstown Road, yes. Not Reisterstown, Maryland. A little difference. It's about 10 miles north of you. I hear it's raining up there, Christopher.
It's a little overcast today. But, Drew, we can talk about Social Security in the meantime, right? People are excited. They're going to get a big cost of living adjustment this year.
That is true. There is a bigger cost of living adjustment this year for Social Security that's coming as of January of next year. Probably be good 5.5%, right? Is that what they're predicting?
Yeah, close to 6, right? Maybe if it was done, we calculated a couple of weeks ago, if they would have done it, it would have been like 5.9% based on how they do it. But of course, as long as your costs aren't going up that much, then you're good.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, that's the question is, what are they going to do with the Medicare Part B premium? Yep. Are they going to leave it at the $150,
right,
or are they going to charge more for it? And that's going to be an interesting question to see what they do with that.
Good.
But anyway,
we've got a couple calls.
All right. Well, then I'll let you go to those calls, Chris.
We still have a couple open phone lines, though, if you're going to give the number out again.
410-922-6680.
Okay, we've got Dave in Arbutus wants to talk about conversions. Not conversion vans, but Roth conversions?
Yes, sir, that's correct. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
Yes, can you give me some guidelines when it actually makes sense to consider converting to a Roth IRA from a pre-tax to a after-tax conversion? Do you know what
absolutely. So the answer to your question is very simple. But it's very complicated all at the same time. So the simplicity of it is, what is the tax bracket I'm in the year I make my conversion? So let's say I'm in the 30% tax bracket, state and federal tax bracket.
Right.
And then the question is, what do you think your tax bracket would be when you would withdraw it later? You know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, let's say, down the road. Now, if I'm in a 30% bracket, all in Fed and state, and I predict that my tax bracket will be 30% or higher, the Roth IRA is immediately a winner. Okay? Now, hear what I said. If it's the same tax bracket or higher, the Roth is going to be a winner. Now, in order for the traditional to be a winner, it has to be a lower tax bracket in the future. And if it's a lower tax bracket, it could be still a loser if I'm in just 1% lower or so forth. But if it's lower, that's when it becomes beneficial. Now, here's where the complication comes in. Number one, you have to predict what you think your tax bracket's going to be in the future. But number two, most people say, well, I'm going to have lower income in the future, so therefore I'm going to be in a lower tax bracket. Well, that's not true. Trust me, I wrote a great article about this, Roth conversions, and it was very humble of me to say that, right, Chris?
Well, I was waiting if there was going to be a pause in there or not.
Anyway, I wrote an article about this. Is you think your income's lower in the future? Maybe I make $120,000 right now, and I say, well, in retirement, I'm going to be making about $60,000, so I'll definitely be in a lower tax bracket. Untrue, because if your Social Security, if you take $5,000 out of an account and all of a sudden $3,000 more of your Social Security becomes taxable, are you really in that low a tax bracket when you take out $5,000 of income and end up with $8,000? You know, there's the complication. It's hard to understand what tax bracket you'll be in, even if you have lower income, because of all these little tax bombs that live inside the tax code. And that's the complexity that we have to deal with. Let's put it this way. If you don't have a lot of Roth money, you ought to be just accepting some taxation on that money and start doing some conversions so that you have a pool of tax-free money growing for you so that you won't have to hit these tax bombs. You'll at least have a tool to work with to minimize those tax bombs.
Right. The article you referred to, is it available?
The other one? The article? Yes, it's go to financialconsulate.com, okay? Consulate, like an embassy, C-O-N-S-U-L-A-T-E, and look under Knowledge Center and then Consulate Journal, or just scroll down and you'll see the Consulate Journal. And you'll find all of our articles, and the one, it's called Roth Conversion Strategies, I think, or something. I'll tell you what it, I'll look for it during the break, and I'll tell you exactly what it's called so you can, you know, just Google search Financial Consulate with the name of the article, and you'll be able to find it relatively quickly, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Good call.
It is. We have another call on, but we're not going to have time to really flesh it out. So if you would stay with us, Washington, we've got several open phone lines if you want to get on. We're at 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, and then we will be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com, if your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I used to be a genius at music until Chris Klaproth made me stop using Shazam. But, you know, I have no idea what this is, and I don't really care either. So we're going to our callers,
Chris. It could
be
a couple of different things. It was just, you know, it could have gone a couple of ways. Chris said something, but I didn't hear him. So we have a couple open phone lines, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. In the meantime, we've got Washington, who wants to talk about Chinese real estate holdings. Washington.
Yes, sir. Good evening, Drew. Good evening, Chris.
How are you, sir?
Okay. How's everyone?
Everyone's great.
Doing great.
What can we do for you?
Well, something that just came across the news in one of my news feeds was this Evergrande Group, and I guess there's some concern with some people, and I don't see where it may necessarily be good or bad for me. What can you tell me?
So the Evergrande Group is a situation that we are not overtly concerned about, because number one, China can deal with it if they have to, and they will. They'll deal with it if they have to. That's just the way they operate. But it's not like 2008 or Lehman Brothers, like they made it out to be. Because in 2008, you had lots of financial institutions in the United States going down. You had not just Lehman Brothers, but you had Bear Stearns. You had AIG. And AIG was doing most of the derivative contracts back then, et cetera, et cetera. Evergrande is a few hundred billion dollars. It'll definitely take a bite out of a few people. But, you know, it can be dealt with, and there's not a big deal. That's why the market didn't really care about it. Don't listen to the media. Media has no idea. They're always looking for reasons as to why things are happening, but they really don't know. And you're best to just not listen to them.
Right, because I didn't see where there's any exposure on my part or anything I would think that you would be doing for any of your clients that would have any exposure in that way.
It could, you know, there's theoretically it could have if they had a lot of they had guaranteed a lot of derivative contracts throughout the world with some of the bigger institutions. But big institutions don't deal with rinkety players like Evergrande. They know they're in trouble ever since like 2012. So nobody's ever dealt with them. There's a few companies out there that have some money with them, like HSBC. But still, it's not a situation that we have to worry about, and China can easily handle it if it did get out of control. Just don't even think about it. All right?
Okay.
Good question, though. Excellent question.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great question.
We're on an open show, Chris.
We are. True. And what do people do about that?
410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask your question. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask your question, and we're here to answer it for you.
Yeah, and it was Steve Winwood, by the way. I knew you really cared.
I really did.
Yeah, okay, we got Gary in Columbia. Gary, what can we do for you?
Hi, doing Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
I'm still trying to figure out ways to mitigate the elimination of the stretch IRA brought on by the Secure Act.
And you're talking about for your children now, right?
For my children, inherited IRAs, basically.
So right.
I came across this article about a QLAC, Qualified Life Annuity Contract, which allows you to take some of your...
Qualified Longevity Annuity.
Longevity, okay.
There you go. Okay.
But the question is, does that have any ability to...
No.
Out?
Qualified longevity annuity is strictly for you, the account holder. If you die and leave one of those to your children, they're going to have to figure out how to liquidate it within 10 years also.
But can't they take some of the inherited money and take out their own QLAC?
No. No, because a QLAC is for your own individual account to protect you from longevity. In other words, it's a way that I could put some money into an account at like 60 years of age that doesn't mature until I'm like 90 years of age, and then that money comes available to me so that I can invest the rest of my money between 60 and 90 relatively aggressively, let's say, knowing that there's going to be this new pot of money again back at 90 years of age. And here's the other thing. I don't even think they're worth talking about yet, you know, because so far I've looked at qualified longevities ever since they've been offered, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, this is a great idea when interest rates were 10 and 12% or 6 or 7%, but at 1 and 2 and 3% at the very most, they're worthless in my opinion. And they've never been able to come out, at least I don't know of any, qualified longevity annuities where you can put them into a variable account, and also you can only put 100,000 in. So if I got $1.5 million, what's the benefit of 100,000 sitting there for 20 years or so?
Well, so, it is limited. It's 135 or 25%, whichever is smaller, I think.
Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. No, you know, we're up to 135,000 but I don't see the benefit of them. And only a person's account holder, not inherited, can do a longevity annuity.
Okay. I thought it had to do with qualified money. If it was in a qualified inherited IRA, that person that inherited it could also do. But okay.
No, as far as I know, now, you know, remember, the SECURE Act is only about a year and a half old now. And as far as I know, you only have 10 years to get it out unless you're an exception to the SECURE Act's 10-year rule. And that's just disabled people, chronically ill people, somebody if you left it to your brother instead of your children, or a minor child, somebody who's under 18 years of age. Can still stretch, but only until they hit 21 years of age.
Okay, so, but continue to look.
Yeah, continue to look. But now there are some unique strategies out there, like the putting the money into a charitable remainder trust. So you leave the IRA to a charitable remainder trust, and the charitable remainder trust pays your children an income for the rest of their lives instead of getting the stretch IRA. They get a charitable remainder annuity for the rest of their lives. I like the idea. It's an okay idea. It's not a great idea in any way, shape, or form. But there are a lot of lawyers who are promoting it because they get to write all the documents and so forth.
And I would have to do that, not my children, after they inherit.
Yes, you would have to set it up during your lifetime, and you'd have to make the beneficiary the annuity, charitable remainder annuity, and then that would pay out to your children for the rest of their lives. But they would never be able to get anything other than the income coming from that annuity during their lifetime.
Okay.
So they couldn't stop it and say, just give me $10,000 or give me $100,000 or give me $1 million or whatever.
Right.
They just get the income as it comes along. And then when they pass away, it goes to charity. And so there's nothing left for your grandchildren either. So I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
all right.
I'll continue to look. I'll continue to call.
All right. If you find one, you let me know, my friend.
I think they wrote it pretty tightly. There doesn't appear to be a silver bullet, unfortunately.
You know, there's really actually nothing wrong with the 10-year rule, in my opinion.
Well, but it increases the amount of taxes that my daughters have to pay for my accumulation.
And guess what you need to do?
What?
You need a Roth strategy. You need a Roth strategy. And that was the caller's question earlier, is what are the strategies behind doing a Roth conversion? And so as I promised him, I told him that I would tell you where this article that I wrote just about 5 months ago, it's called A Roth Strategy. And if you Google search financial consulate, a Roth strategy, that should be the first thing that comes up on that web search. So financial consulate, like an embassy, CONSULATE, consulate. All right.
I'll look that up. I just hate to pay the taxes now on the conversion, even though.
But I think you'd be making a major mistake not coming up with a Roth strategy. And you may find that there are times that you can do these very effectively during your retired years. So, like, for example, myself, I've moved out of Maryland. Well, I'm going to do lots of Roth strategies because Roth conversion strategies, because I'm eliminating 8% of the state income tax on this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I heard you last week talk about that. That's interesting. Okay. I'll look that article up. I appreciate it.
All right. We've got to go to pause, right, Christopher?
Yeah. Sean, stay with us. We are an open show, 410-922-6680. We will be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. We have lines open if you want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680. And we were telling our other listeners about an article called A Roth Strategy. And if you want to get that article, the Consulate Journal is on our website. It's under the Knowledge Center. Or you can just Google search Financial Consulate, A Roth Strategy, and it should be the first search item that comes up. Chris, who's on the line for us?
We've got Sean from the Eastern Shore. Sean, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a debt ceiling question. Every year, you know, it comes up in our face again, whether they're going to up the debt ceiling, and of course, looks like they're going to, obviously. But my question is, what concerns, other than devaluation of the dollar and inflation, should we be looking at long-term for the debt ceiling? Because probably is not going to go down anytime soon.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest risk if you continue to borrow unconditionally, you know, and assume. But the number one thing you have to look for, Sean, is you have to look for foreign lending to the United States. That's the key. As long as Americans are lending America the money, or the Federal Reserve is sucking up the debt of the United States government, I don't think you have to worry too much. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not a modern monetary theorist. I don't believe in that garbage. That's pure unadulterated garbage that thinks that the United States can borrow unlimited amounts of money and it'll never affect them. That's ridiculous. But as long as foreign borrowing is not a big component of our country, you're not really worried. You shouldn't be sitting back being worried about anything.
The percentage of foreign borrowing? I'm sorry.
It's only about 20% of our total country's borrowing. Is about 20% at the most. And everybody keeps saying, you know, well, China's going to drop all the American debt and we're going into the tank. And, well, you know, we owe like $22 trillion to people, and China owes us, I mean, holds about $900 billion. Actually, Japan holds $1.2 trillion. They're the largest holder of U.S. debt. And I think total overall, it's only about $4 trillion or so that they own, foreigners own. So it's not an overwhelming amount of money, and it's an easy thing that the Federal Reserve could deal with if it were ever to become an issue. So, you know, that's the key you have to always look at, is foreign lending to the United States. And if that starts to move aggressively upward, now you've got a warning flag that you really have to take attention to. All right.
And where can I look to kind of keep an eye on that? Where's a good reference or material to look at?
Well, there's lots of places to find that. You can just Google search it. There are plenty of websites that'll give you that number. But one of the easiest is if you get Barron's magazine in their statistical or their chart pages. One of those pages says Treasury balance sheet and the amount of foreign holding there. And it's in Barron's. I think it'd be like one of the last 15 pages or so in the newspaper. That's where I normally look at it on a regular basis, because I'm scrolling through it anyway. So I might as well just stop and look while I go through it. But there's lots of places you can easily pick that up.
Thank you for your perspective. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Take care. Good question, though. Very good question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he wasn't just listening to the news. He was looking at the bigger issue behind it all. I mean, you go to Treasury, treasury.gov, pick out what's there. So, Drew, we have all open phone lines.
Totally open phone lines. Well, that's amazing. So, the amount of foreign borrowing, why is that so important? You see, because what would happen is if you're lending money to foreigners, they're on a different currency than us. So if your currency starts to drop and you have too much money out there by foreigners, that's where countries like Russia and Argentina ran into serious problems, is because they had borrowed so much money from foreigners that when all of a sudden their currency started to drop, there was a run on their debt. Nobody wanted to own it, you know, because if you're a foreigner, just think about it. Let's say in Germany, you're getting 0% rate of return on your money. Let's use that number, okay? And so you say, well, I'm going to buy U.S. debt because I'm getting 2% on U.S. debt. Well, if all of a sudden the euro starts to appreciate against the dollar and it goes up 1%, it goes up 2%, all of a sudden you've wiped out your entire rate of return on your U.S. money. And now all of a sudden, if the euro goes up 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, like this year, it went up 10% against the U.S. dollar. You're now, not only did you not get a rate of return, you're now down 8% on that money. And all of a sudden, those people will start dumping those bonds and saying, I don't want to own this stuff anymore. And that can be a panicky situation and very difficult for a Federal Reserve to handle if the market, starts selling substantially. But that normally happens when you have substantial foreign borrowing, not when you have U.S. Because the U.S. investor, if you're getting 2%, you're getting 2%. Doesn't matter if the dollar collapses. It's totally irrelevant to the American investor because you're still getting back dollars. Now, you know, you might be a smart investor that says, yeah, but internationally, my valuation of my dollars are going down. Yeah, but the average investor doesn't feel that as a U.S. investor, you know? But the foreign investor, they feel it immediately, no matter how average an investor they are. They feel it immediately, and they want to get out of there as quickly as possible. So that's why foreign borrowing is so important to watch and keep your eye on if you're worried about the U.S. dollar plummeting in value like the Argentinian peso did, or the Russian ruble did, or the Venezuelan currency did. You know, these are the types of things that happen, and it's normally due to excessive foreign borrowing and in other currencies. That's where you start to see your problem. Anyway, we're an open show, 410-922-6680. Instead of listening to myself ramble, I'd rather listen to and answer the questions that you have, things that would be important to you, things that you would like to know, and if I could answer, would be beneficial to you. That's what's important to us. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. I guess I didn't encourage anyone to call in yet, Chris.
There you go. You just did. And we have somebody calling in. Larry is on the line. So as we get Larry's question fielded and then answered, we've got a couple open phone lines, still actually three to be specific. But Larry in Pikesville, what can we do for you? Social Security question?
Yes. I hope you, this is in your wheelhouse. So I have a friend who is in her 80s, has not taken Social Security. And her husband passed away, and I think he was eligible. He didn't get it either. But would the path to take, would that be to take her to the Social Security office and get answers from them, or is there something I should know about before doing that? Should I take her to come see you, for example, and talk
about
it?
No. But I'm hurt that you asked me if it was in my wheelhouse or not. But anyway, I'm going to answer your question anyway.
Social Security, I'm sorry.
That's right. No, Larry, that's okay. Don't mind him. He thinks his wheelhouse is larger than mine. So there is no wheelhouse. It's just everything is equal for him. He does it all. So anyway,
so here's
the first
your
thing
answer.
That came to my mind was, were they federal employees with pensions?
What was that question? What did you say?
Were they federal employees with pensions?
No, she didn't work long enough to contribute to Social Security.
Ah, okay.
Now, he was, I believe, a police officer.
Okay.
And
where was he a police officer?
In Maryland.
So was he, when he was a police officer, did he pay into Social Security?
I believe so, yeah. I think they took it out.
Okay, well, what you should do is set up a call and set up an appointment with the Social Security office, bring her in, bring the husband's Social Security number, her Social Security number, let them go through all the information and see if did the husband have an account that was qualified 40 quarters? Did she have an account qualified 40 quarters? And they will give her the higher of the two, and they'll give her a retroactive check for 6 months. They can't go all the way back to age 70, but they will give her 6 months lump sum.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
All right. So get an appointment as soon as possible. You know, my trick to talk to Social Security is to call them at exactly as the clock turns 7 o'clock. That's what you do.
Okay.
You sit 7 a.m. You watch your computer, your iPhone. The minute it clicks over to 7 o'clock, hit dial, and you'll get through maybe in 10 minutes instead of 2 hours.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. And that would be just any branch Social Security office.
No, just call the 800 number. Just call the Social Security 800 number.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Okay,
all right,
Larry,
buddy.
Thanks
Take
for calling.
Care.
Yeah, it's great.
Good question.
Okay. So, Joe, we got a great question, but we're going to have to ask you to hold. And anyone else who wants to get on the line, you can. But, Drew, we have to pause for a second.
We have to take a pause.
And we're going to be right back with more of Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com, if your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. And
we are. We've got a couple callers online. We have Joe in Ellicott City. He's been hanging on for a while. You want to go to Joe?
Yes, let's go to Joe.
Okay. Joe, how are you, sir? Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate the show. I appreciate you taking the call. Quick question in reference to a Roth IRA.
Yeah?
Could you just talk about the limits to contribution and limits to income in order to contribute?
Okay, so that's a simple question and I'm going to add some complexity to it. So first off, if you can get your employer to do a Roth 401k feature in your Roth 401k, there are no income limits. So if I have a Roth 401k option available to me and I make $1 million a year, you can still put $19,500 in there. And if I'm over 50, you can put in $26,000 into the Roth. So first off, you have to keep in mind the income limits you're referring to are Roth IRAs, not Roth 401k. Second, you can always convert any pre-tax account, be it 401k or IRA, into a Roth. And there are currently, and this is an operative word, currently no income limitations on that. But I will say that there is a movement amongst the current political party to change that rule again. So now let's get to the question you're asking. Let's say I just want to do my $6,000 contribution to a Roth IRA, and I know there are income limits. So for a single person, I believe that number is $126,000 or somewhere real close to that. For a married couple, it's $198,000. So, and it's a phase-out. For the single person, it's a $15,000 phase-out. So let's say it's $125,000. It phases out all the way up to $140,000 pro rata. On a married couple, it phases out over $10,000. So it goes from $198,000 to $208,000. So if I make $203,000 and I'm exactly in the middle, instead of being able to do $6,000, I'm only able to do $3,000. So those are the income limits, but that's strictly for Roth IRA contributions. Now, let me throw one more piece of complexity in there. If you have a really good tax person, we don't care what income you make. So, but that's a different story that I can't answer on the air easily. And I don't want anybody trying it unless they know how these rules work. But that's what you're talking about. Did I help you there at all, or did I confuse you more?
No, you helped. I genuinely appreciate it. If I heard you right, the more money you make, the less you can put into your Roth IRA.
If you make $208,000, you can put nothing into your Roth IRA unless you did a conversion, unless you have a really good tax person like us to help you get that accomplished.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right, Jerry.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, sir.
But, you know, Chris, I want to say this to every employer out there. If you're not offering a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b to your employers, and yet you have a 403b or you have a 401k you're offering your employees, but there's no Roth feature, you're hurting them. hear me clear. It's a very clear statement. You are hurting your employees because a lot of the lower income employees should be doing Roth. They should never be doing pre-tax contributions. And all the higher income employees should be doing Roth and they shouldn't be doing pre-tax. So get your act together. Put a Roth 401k and a Roth 403b in for your employees, and every employee should be screaming at their employer to get that done for them. Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
All right, sir. We've got a little less than 4 minutes, and we've got three callers. Let's see if we can go through each of them. So, Pete, welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Hi there, fellas. I'll make this quick. I'm 86 and a half years old, and I've been in business since I've been 26, so I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And there are three businesses out there that are safe businesses to invest in. One is the water business. We have to have water to live.
Okay.
The second is food production. We have to have food to live.
Yep.
The third is alcohol, because people get very unhappy if they can't get a drink.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, that was quick.
Those businesses will never go out of business, and the government will do everything they have to do to keep them in business.
All right. Well, All right, thank you, Pete. Okay. That's good point.
Thanks for calling us, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. All right, next up, we've got Rebecca in PA. So, Rebecca, Social Security is on your mind?
Yeah, I'll just make it a quick, okay, the question about the guy whose friend was 70 years old. If she
80.
Applies, if she applies for Social Security now, maybe she's on Medicaid. If she applies for Social Security now and they take out the Medicare, she's going to have a penalty, isn't she?
Well, she's probably already on Medicare in some way, shape, or form, I would assume. But you're right, Rebecca. If for some reason she never signed up for Medicare and now she's going for Medicare, yeah, she would have a penalty. But I have to assume that she's on it somehow or another.
She wasn't getting any Social Security. Can't
right, but they're not necessarily tied together.
No, they are not.
They can be, but they're not. Right.
If you're getting a Social Security check, your Medicare is always coming out of it. But if you're not, you just pay it directly. And a lot of people did. Probably what happened, a lot of police officers were under a pension plan that did not pay into Social Security. And if he was under one of those plans, he wouldn't get Social Security. And her is the survivor. She would definitely not get Social Security if she gets a survivor under his police pension. So more than likely, they're paying for their Medicare directly. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Good call. All right. Now, Jack in Towson. Jack, we have time for you. So welcome to the show. What's your question?
Okay. On annuity fees, first of all, the salesmen, they used to get, you know, these huge fees. Now we got to sell them. And now we got these no commission annuity products. The question in part is, although there's not an obvious, you know, 10% commission or something, you know, that they're telling you they're taking off right at the top, could the annuity companies be basically paying, in effect, the same thing? Just the terms of the annuity that the person's buying will be a little bit less, because they're taking off a little extra schnitzel, as they say,
In the commission-free products, it's just like in the old days of the commission-free mutual funds. The expense ratios are lower, and there are no commissions. The products are better. They pay out more. Just like the old days when you'd buy an active managed mutual fund with commissions and you buy a no-load mutual fund. Ultimately, over time, people realize that the no-load mutual funds were cheaper. And because they were cheaper, they performed better in line. And that's the exact same thing that's going on with no commission annuities. Now, I will say, though, that there are people who could sell a no commission annuity and then put an internal fee in there that will jack up the internal cost of the annuity. But you have to be careful of that. And as long as that's not going on, you're going to be doing yourself a favor going with the commission free annuities.
How would I know?
You just ask. Ask whoever's doing it for you, saying, are you getting anything out of this, and how much are you getting?
Yeah, they've got
to disclose
it. It
has to be disclosed.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. All right?
All right. And I guess the variable annuities, you know, they always had these 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, you know, annual fee. You know, they're more expensive than those fixed index ones. Is that still the case?
Well, the index ones, they hide the fees in there. You just don't see them. Okay. You know, what they're doing is they're structuring the product that they know that they're going to make 3 or 4% on your money, and guaranteeing you to only make 2 or 3% on your money. So if you look how they do the indexes and things, they're guaranteeing that they're going to make a lot of money on your money, and you're going to make very little, and they have very little risk whatsoever. So be careful with that one, too. And I've got to go. Chris, we're out of time here, but that was a great round of calls quickly at the end, too.
We did them. You did a great job. Yes,
this
sir.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna be much better.